Welcome to the program, friends, and thank you for tuning in to Red Ice Creations Radio. We are recording from the west coast of Sweden. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I am the editor and webmaster of RedIceCreations.com, a website dedicated to news, research, and exploration of topics and areas that we consider to be both interesting and of great importance in these interesting times that we live in. So I hope that you stop by the website often, read the articles and participate by making comments and joining us in the forum, and we also welcome submissions and tips to the website. We also, of course, have this radio show. We have a new program up for you every Thursday and Sunday. Interviews with interesting guests talking about interesting topics. And today with us on the line, we do have an interesting guest. We are going to dive into a mix of different interesting subjects like esoteric astrology, a bit Egyptology, a little New Age, some 2012, and maybe some Stargate conspiracy also, perhaps. Our guest is Greg from the website or a blog called Occult of Personality, and maybe you guys out there are familiar with his site already. The URL is rochester92.vox.com. And a while back, Greg did an interview with me and Frederick from Red Ice Creations, and we have linked up a few of Greg's excellent postings, interviews, and podcasts before, so hopefully you are familiar with Occult of Personality at this point. If you are not, now is the time to check it out. Again, the URL is rochester92.vox.com. So it's a pleasure to have Greg with us today to be able to talk more about his site, how things got going, and where things are going to end up, I guess. But so with that, let's say welcome to Greg, and thank you so much for spending some time with us here today, Greg.
Thank you very much, Henrik. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it. I'm a huge fan of your show.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's great to have you. I'm glad we managed to get together here. And you know, I kind of love to begin, I guess, to talk a little bit about your website here today. You know, how I guess how things got started, and I guess when you got started, you kind of I don't know when I became aware of your work. How long have you been around?
Well, the site's been up probably since the end of September or early October of 2006. So not that long.
Yeah, but you seem to have been able to dive, you know, dive right into the, you know, some of the most interesting topics out there, I guess. I mean, what's your background, so to speak? Have you been reading and studying these subjects for a long time before you started the site?
Well, I've always sort of been interested in what you would consider sort of otherworldly subjects, sort of anything from fantasy or science fiction to the occult, you know, ever since I was younger. Mm-hmm. But I'd say recently, in the past year or so, I've become a lot more interested in learning more about it. I really started the site as a way of connecting with other people who were researching these same topics,
yeah,
to learn about what they were doing. And, you know, if I could just sort of connect with them and talk with them, because I don't really have anyone in my own life that I can talk about these subjects. So.
I totally hear what you're saying. This is I think that's a great, you know, kind of way to do it, just kind of to be able to, you know, create this, I guess, loose network. And you have had some excellent, you know, interviews up there on your site, of course. But in regards to, I guess, if we go back, you know, a few years or so, then, I mean, were there some kind of, have you been, you know, listening to a lot of online radio? Did you discover some documentary that kind of got your eyes open to this? Or were there any kind of particular events or research that really, you know, I get nudged you in this direction, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's very easy to point them out too.
Yeah,
the work of Jordan Maxwell, the work of Michael Tessarian, the work of you and Frederick with your website, Red Ice Creations.
Thank you.
Those are probably the main three influences that really sort of made me want to delve a lot deeper into this material.
Yeah. You know, in regards to it being difficult, I mean, what do you think it is that is so difficult for people to generally? I mean, do you find it that people just don't wanna in your surrounding, I guess, don't wanna talk about these subjects, or do you feel that you know you have to have a huge background or knowledge, I guess, in regards to these topics to be able to talk about them, or is there anything else, do you think, that kind of prevents us from communicating with all people on this? Because I totally, you know what you're saying, so to speak.
Yeah, actually, I from my experience, it's really been twofold. The first is, you know, and it's just a general ignorance about these subjects. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's, you know, some people choosing to be ignorant. It's just that they're not taught. And if they are taught, they're taught in a misleading way from what I've seen.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, once you're aware of all of these subjects and the background and history of them, you really have to have an open mind and be able to basically look at things that you may have been taught since you were a child and reject them, you know, outright.
Yeah.
Not everyone, of course, you know, would have that same experience, but that was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that's a lot of other people's as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I guess there are so many, you know, so many different subjects, of course, that we, you know, that we're talking about here. It's, I guess we could connect, you know, history and ancient history with this, and of course the more new research in regards to, you know, where we're currently heading, it seems, you know, into the new world order type scenario. And so, I mean, do you have a sense of urgency? Because I can feel that sometimes, you know, that on one level, I'm just, you know, interested in finding out, you know, more about these subjects in regards to that. I'm curious about them, but I can sometimes I really, you know, feel this sense of urgency in regards to that. This is very important stuff if we're able to, you know, be able to break free from certain, you know, things that are being implemented at the moment. Do you share that view?
Yes, I do. I don't know if I describe it so much as urgency for me as a sense of being proactive more.
Mm.
I guess it kind of allays any sort of fear or tension and anxiety by, you know, being able to actually explore these things and talk with people about them instead of just being bombarded by all these different messages from, you know, not only mainstream media and society, but also the alternative media.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think there's a lot of mixed messages there as well. So.
Sure. There's a lot of, I guess, a lot of agendas out there, and there's, you know, a lot of different people who want to, you know, go in a lot of different ways, so to speak, and try to, of course, influence people to, I guess, believe in this or the other or anything like that. But what I really appreciate about your website also, of course, is you know, that there's, it seems to be more about the kind of exploration of the topics rather than the you know, the denotation of something or saying that this or the other is bad or evil or whatever. Is that kind of your something that you purposely try to, you know, highlight, so to speak?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, anybody who actually goes and does the reading and does the research into the primary sources, and, you know, you're familiar with all of these type of books, Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings,
sure.
Blavatsky's Isis Unveiled and Secret Doctrine, the work of people like Rudolf Steiner, you know,
yeah.
All of these writers, you know, they kind of give you a lot of the information from the ancient world, and I think by labeling it as good or bad, you're really limiting yourself in understanding it.
Yeah.
At least that's the way I look at it. inserted, you know, into the type of things that we see going on around us now.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the ancient world, when they talk about the mystery schools, there's nothing inherently bad about that. And I think that's important to recognize.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And again, if we are to understand it, we have to, I guess, you know, get in the mindset of those people to be able to understand the knowledge and actually what they meant. If we are to, you know, I think that in all cases there are, you know, you can learn from it, whether you, you know, agree on it or not. And I mean, this is of course in regards to, you know, when words like the occult come up and so forth. And of course your website is called The Occult of Personality. So I guess I'd like to ask you, you know, what's your take on the occult? Is it something sinister, or what is it?
In my opinion, it's not something sinister, but I find it somewhat humorous that people do think that it is. Sure, there are aspects of it that certainly could be. Just like anything, any type of information that's powerful, it really depends on what the person does with it.
Mm, yeah.
You know, somebody who has very, you know, powerful information can do something very good or very bad with it.
Sure.
So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
And you know, there are a lot of people that I think kind of treat it as a verboten topic, that, you know, that you're not something that shouldn't be delved into. It should be avoided. And then there are those who want to know about it, but still think it's evil,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a person that wants to know about it and is, you know, just being open-minded and trying to, you know, pick my way through all of the minefield of things, because, you know, just like any field, there is a lot of disinformation there.
Mm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in regards to, you know, what the subjects and so to speak, that you bring up on the site and that you write about, this is a bit of a difficult question, I guess. But is there something in particular, kind of, that you are searching for or trying to, you know, to find out or get to the root to, or is it just the variety of topics that interest you?
Yeah, it's really a variety of subjects that interest me. I'm not trying to get to any ultimate truth. I'm not, you know, even sure that this information would lead me to that, except for the knowledge that, you know, there is no necessarily a secret, ultimate secret, that many people will try to sell you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's also important that these subjects don't, you know, continue to be, you know, kind of swept under the rug, because there is a lot of important information here. And, you know, when we get into talking about things like the New Age, for many people who are just coming to these subjects, it is new. But for people who are familiar with the occult, it's basically, you know, looks like reinventing the wheel.
Indeed. You know, this is one thing that came to mind just today when thinking about all this, that, you know, all the thousands of hours, I guess, that goes into, you know, collectively, that goes into studying these subjects. I mean, all the reading, the watching, and the writing, and the listening to, and so forth. Do you think that, you know, we, as a, I don't know if I want to call it research community, I don't know if we're supposed to set that kind of name on it, but anyway, do you think that we are, you know, actually getting closer to some of this information in regards to, you know, that we are understanding what the initiates or the illuminated ones actually are, you know, their knowledge that they have, or are we just, you know, dabbling, I guess, around in a lot of subjects that basically just waste our time? Do you think that we're getting close, you know, to actually understanding what they were up to, so to speak?
Yeah, I think in a lot of senses, clear that, you know, that information about what is going on in terms of, you know, geopolitics or occult ritual is, you know, becoming a lot more clear in the past, you know, couple hundred years for certain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people like, you know, Michael Tessarian always point this out, that, you know, we should be optimistic that we've learned this much.
Yeah.
You know, in past times, people had no clue as to any of this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We're in a time when again the and this is, I guess, something that is, you know, in the new age material in that sense, that we are in a in an age of you know, knowledge and of course revealing in that sense, that we are approaching this. And again, I'm very thankful for, you know, that we have the internet now, and hopefully it will, you know, we will have this in this format for a while longer, so we can continue and grow, so to speak, because it feels like it is at least a kind of a loose network that is actually developing here. And it's great, you know, to get in contact with, you know, people like yourselves and a lot of researchers out there, and you know, finally kind of build up our own little loose network. Would you agree on that?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's important to, you know, not necessarily collaborate, but kind of, you know, keep in touch with people, be aware of what everyone is working on and bringing forward, because you know, this information is all so fresh, you know, the research, investigation, and, you know, for many people, it's brand new, never having encountered it before. But in terms of the internet, you know, I agree with you 100%. I certainly hope that it continues in its present form, you know, in some senses, where, you know, anybody who is able can put up a website.
Yeah.
And in terms of how that goes, I know, at least for in terms of business, it's integral now. So if the internet were gone or not freely available, I'm not sure how many businesses would function. At least that I'm working with myself. So.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That might be a reason for them to continue in the manner that they do now. I mean, we of course have the danger of censoring them. That seems to be a kind of a bit of a hot topic at the moment. I mean, there are many different, you know, countries out there. They're actually just block different websites, and they set up, you know, the internet service providers set up their own kind of filter in regards to which site they allow and not. Do you think that this is a danger now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because not only is it, you know, certain countries, but these certain countries are working with certain companies that, you know, allow this to happen. So it's definitely a danger, you know. And I think it's important, you know. You know, anybody who's listening, if you're, you know, interested in these subjects and you're, you know, online, you know, I would recommend not only just checking these things out, but if you can, download as much as possible and save it.
Yeah, exactly. We need to have the material, because we're in this, again, very favorable situation right now, at least, where a lot of this stuff is available. But I guess that's also one of the dangers. I don't know if YouTube is being sued now by Viacom, and a lot of people, you know, have uploaded their material there, and a lot of, you know, documentaries are available on Video Google and YouTube. But I mean, if they take that stuff down, I mean, that has been a very useful tool, so to speak, for, you know, being able to get the documentaries out there. But hopefully, you know, we can, you know, find new sources, at least, that we can, you know, continue to put up documentaries and so forth.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, I can only hope that, you know, the continued advancement in information technology will aid that process.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Another thing that comes to mind is, of course, when we're speaking about all of these subjects, you mentioned, of course, Jake Coetzee earlier, and would you say that in regards to knowledge, do you get the feeling that you kind of have grown, you know, spiritually in regards to the material that you read and that you, you know, dive into? Because I remember when I first, you know, began and reading a lot of this and began to put up the website and so forth, I could, you know, get the, you know, I really got the feeling that, you know, the most important stuff that I learned was in regards to the spiritual stuff, in regards to that, even learning about subject like, you know, synchronicity and things like this. I actually went, you know, from being an atheist to actually believing in some kind of higher force or overmind, as you said before. Have you noticed that you've kind of gone through the same deal, or what's your background in regards to, you know, your spiritual aspects on this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Henrik. Let's see. I guess you could say that part of why I'm doing this is because a few years ago I began becoming more spiritual, wanting to learn more about religious heritage, and I've always been a big history buff. So not only was I interested in theology, but also the origin of the theology.
Mm-hmm.
And as I began to study more, it really forced me to take a really hard look at the things that I believed and why I believed them, and then throw them out and start over.
Yeah.
So yes, I think I not only have I learned a lot, but I've become more spiritual, and it's like a more authentic spirituality for me, because now I believe things because I have thought about them and investigated them and know them.
Mm.
Whereas before I believed things because I was told that's the way things were.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, if we were to get on a more mystical note, I mean, couldn't we say in a sense that what you're describing is a kind of an initiation?
In a sense, it certainly is. You know, because the initiation process involves, as always, a death and a rebirth.
Sure, exactly. So, I mean, it's the...
Or as some call it, a resurrection.
Yeah, it's the awakening mind that finally is, you know, coming to light. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, one other thing that I really would like to dive into here today is in regards to an article that you wrote a while back. It is called Esoteric Astrology and New Age Implications, and this is fascinating stuff. I'd like to talk more about it if you can, and maybe kind of go through this from the top. I guess that you base this on a few other sources, Manly Hall and also Blavatsky that you mentioned earlier, but I guess we could begin on the note of that there is two ways of seeing astrology and the zodiac in general. Isn't that right?
That's right. And this is, you know, common to many occult concepts. So it's not just limited to astrology, but it's a great illustration of this idea. So the normal, what they call exoteric astrology for the masses, is I think what they call a geocentric model.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's the one we're all familiar with. You know, they put the horoscopes in the paper, and everybody's aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, the esoteric is slightly different, and you have to actually either look or imagine the zodiac wheel to see how this works. Because basically, the esoteric model is heliocentric. So, when you're thinking about a zodiac wheel, you're talking about the sun shining from one house of the Zodiac across the wheel into the other house of the Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so currently we're in Pisces exoterically, but that's Virgo esoterically.
So that,
that means,
yeah,
you know, we're going into Leo instead of Aquarius, which has a lot of meaning for occult societies.
Absolutely. I mean, so what you're saying is that the, as it is now, as we view it, the sun is shining on. Okay. There is the question, of course, if we are actually in Pisces or Aquarius in the official term, of course, but the sun is shining towards Pisces or Aquarius now. Is that the exoteric?
That's right, the exoteric. So essentially, what you're talking about is worshiping the house of the sun's dwelling, not the, you know, target of its rays. So this house of the sun's dwelling, in this case, right now, would be Virgo.
And this is something, I guess, that both Manly Palmer Hall and Blavatsky wrote about and was aware of.
Yeah, in fact, it was interesting because, you know, before reading Secret Teachings, I'd never really encountered it before. So, and to be honest with you, Hall doesn't really spend all that much time talking about it. I mean, maybe a page or two at most.
Yeah.
And so I checked into Blavatsky more, who goes into great detail about this, and she confirms basically, you know, exactly what he says, and takes it a lot further, you know, talking about things like in the ancient world, the zodiac only had 10 signs and not 12. Right? So Virgo and Scorpio was actually a single sign. Libra, and it split the two, so you then had Libra in between Virgo and Scorpio.
So,
and that relates, according to Blavatsky, to all kinds of things like the deluge, which is related to Pisces. He said Libra, which is the seventh sign, is related to Enoch. And then Scorpio is related to Cain, which led mankind to destruction. But according to the true doctrine of the wisdom religion, it indicated the degradation of the whole universe in its course from what she called evolution downward from the subjective to the objective.
Interesting. You know, so we are, okay, so we are speaking about the Scorpio, and I guess that this is, as you said, this connects with the biblical story of the virgin and the serpent, because there is a Scorpio is a lot of different signs, isn't that right?
Yeah, Scorpio, well, of course we all know it as the scorpion, but esoterically it is the serpent, and it actually has another sign, which is the eagle. So we all actually know it very well.
So this event, or this sign, or this particular period that we are addressing here, might actually be the kind of the macrocosm idea of the story of the virgin and the serpent, and of course the fall of man, I guess.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, I don't have any evidence to back it up, but it seems to indicate that the zodiac and its origins is, you know, all based upon, you know, the same idea of, you know, Genesis, or the fall of man, or, you know, all of these type of ideas that we read about, you know, whether you interpret them as, you know, literal, or, you know, in terms of the ancient myths, or whether you interpret them astronomically or astrologically.
So, do you know when, or if Blavatsky goes into, you know, when this split occurred? For example, let's take this with, you know, going from 10 to 12, for example. Do you know if she gives any kind of timeline to this, when this happened?
You know, I don't think she lists it specifically in this passage, but I'm fairly sure that in the book that she does go into sort of time frames. And to be honest with you, can't recall.
Sure,
exactly.
Sure.
Her work is a bit dense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to say, I rely a lot more on Manly Hall for these type of things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, but you know, this is an interesting aspect, because I know that Blavatsky also, of course, dived into the area of, you know, speaking of, in regards to the different ages being different lengths and so forth, being, you know, taking several thousand years. We are, of course, talking about the precession of the equinox, and you know, going from 10 to 12, and why they divided up. But I guess where we're going with this then is that we're not in this period now entering, as you said, into the age of Aquarius, but actually going into to Leo, entering into the sign of the lion.
Yeah, right. So esoterically, in a sense, we are entering into an age of the height of solar power, which means, you know, those that worship the sun having power.
Mm.
You know, and Manly Hall had this quote where he said, "The secret religions of the world will include once more the raising to initiation by the grip of the lion's paw."
Hmm.
That kind of tells you exactly what's going on.
Yeah. This is interesting, Ether, because, you know, again, we can, you know, we can tie this back, of course, as you say, to the Lion King story out there. I mean, that we have the return of Jesus coming back as a lion, of course, and all this stuff.
Oh, right, in that movie, right? The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
exactly.
Chronicles of Narnia, I think it's called.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
Returning as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah, of course. And we have the, you know, even the UK in regards to that, you know, having the lion on their insignia. I mean, it might be a hint there that, you know, they at least know what actually is going on.
Oh, yeah, and you'll find this in a lot of places that, you know, you may not even expect. For instance, Rastafarian.
Yeah, yeah.
A religion.
You yeah.
know, they make great use of the lion symbol.
Sure. That's the, I mean, we haven't even have the, what's the Bob Marley song called? The Lion of Zion, right?
That's right.
Yeah. That's interesting stuff. So, I mean, okay, we have the lion going into that. What do you think that this would kind of mean? Could we tie more into this? I know, for example, that Graham Hancock speaks a lot about this time going back, what is it, 10 to 10,500 BC, in regards to, you know, the pyramid builders, or the, you know, ancient navigators, wherever you want to call them, actually set up and built the Sphinx and stuff like this. Do you think that there could be a connection here, so to speak, with these guys' research and with this evidence that you're pointing to here?
Well, it's certainly related. You know, I don't claim to know if it's, you know, definitely linked, but, you know, you'd have to think that, you know, there is some connection on some level,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, this probably, you know, relates back to, you know, this idea that, you know, Jake Kotze talks about in synchromysticism, where, you know, there's these seeming coincidences that, you know, seem to be more relevant than they at first would appear.
Yeah. So, I mean, there could be hints here. I mean, do you think that we could tie in even the face on Mars? I know that, I don't know if it's was it Richard Hoagland who did a special kind of treatment on that image, which actually turned out to look a lot like a lion's head? Do you remember that image?
I do think I have seen that. I know from my own research, I've really relied more on the work of Wayne Herschel, who I'm sure you've had on the program before,
sure.
who talks quite a bit about this.
This, I mean, we could go into the area, I guess, of 2012 here. This is always an interesting, you know, aspect to hear people's interpretation of that event. I mean, a lot of people talk about it. A lot of, you know, ideas, of course, are out there in regards to what it means and so forth. What have you been able to pick up? What's your sense or what's your feeling on this?
Yeah, this is a topic I talk about quite a bit. 2012, the New Age, eschatology, and all of the maelstrom that's surrounding these ideas. Well, in relation to, you know, what we were just talking about with the esoteric astrology, I think, you know, if that has any meaning that we're going into Leo, then I think that would correspond very much with the, you know, type of surveillance society that we seem to be going into at the moment that, you know, you talk about a great deal on your site, which is, you know, very worthwhile. But in terms of the whole concept, I think that people need to be aware and cautious because, you know, there's so many people jumping on the bandwagon, right?
Yeah.
You have doomsayers, you have cult leaders, you have all sorts of people who would consider themselves New Agers. Some of these people are legitimate, some of them have an agenda, and some of them are just trying to make money. And it's important, I think, that people be aware that there are those categories out there. And I know it sounds ridiculous to say that, right? But you know, I guarantee you when you talk with people, they're going to bring up someone who, you know, you might say, well, this, you know, is ridiculous. This guy's just trying to make money. It's, this research is, you know, meaningless or whatever. But, you know, not everyone is discriminating. And these people, you know, are good salesmen. They're good at what they do.
Sure.
So I think, you know, you have to be cautious. If somebody's selling something, especially if it's more than just a book, I think you really have to be, you know, aware of what they're talking about and where it comes from. And I think, you know, if you look at the work of, like, the Collins brothers, you know, their ascendancy of the scientific dictatorship, that'll give you a very good history of all of these ideas that are wrapped up in these things.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, do you think that they could be jumping on this bandwagon now, even the, I mean, if we're talking about more sinister forces that might be behind this creation, I guess, of the New Age or whatever, in the sense that, you know, they're trying to, jump on the bandwagon that this is a big event, something huge is going to happen. I mean, either we could take it into the area of, you know, tremendous earth changes, upheavals in regards to, you know, global warming, or we could, you know, as you said, we can take it into the more, you know, surveillance type deal with even the shipping of people and so forth. Because it seems like 2012 is going more and more mainstream by the day, basically. A lot of documentaries out there, even, you know, Discovery Channel and National Geographic are picking up on this. And so, I mean, do you think that we will see a rise in this particular area, so to speak?
Yes, that's a good question. One of the things I think about a lot in terms of this topic is, like you mentioned, going so mainstream. And I had a little article the other day about this program I heard on the radio called Studio 360, and they did a segment called, you know, it was basically, you know, the end of the world has begun. They were out on the street, you know, talking to people, you know. You know, what do you think of 2012? And, you know, oh, it's the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
So, and they interviewed Daniel Pinchbeck, who has a lot of really good ideas and that's around this whole topic, right? But he seems more than most. But I like what he has to say about it in terms of the fact that, you know, our consciousness sort of co-creates our reality. You know, if everybody is convinced that the end of the world is coming, you know, you better look out. But, you know, if we hear more of the idea that, you know, this is going to be a positive change, you know, even if it's not for everybody, you know, maybe that was the way to sort of think about it, at least.
Yeah, I totally hear what
you're saying. In a sense, there's no reason to become, you know, frantic in this sort of apocalyptic terror because, you know, is that going to stop it? You know what I mean? That seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, again, I totally hear what you're saying, and I totally agree. It's the, you know, jumping on the bandwagon, and another thing we all can, you know, whatever, just gather around and you know, not trying to understand it in that sense. We're belonging to the group that believes in 2012 or whatever, and that's the that's the backside of all of this. I think that we are in for a tremendous, you know, possibility of actually being able to change something here, but if they are able to kind of steer this into the to this direction that you're speaking of, destruction or mayhem or end of the world type scenario, I think that we have kind of totally lost the concept of what's going on here. Do you agree on that?
Yeah, I do, and I think, you know, what you're pointing to is significant because ultimately what it sets up is an expectation in everybody's mind that something is going to happen, right? And when everyone has that expectation, it's very easy for someone or a lot of people to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but it's bound to occur.
Yeah, it is. You know, also another, you know, interesting idea and interesting subject here is a little bit in regards to an article that you sent me a while back, talking about Dr. Sahi Hawass, of course. The article was entitled "Does Egypt's Indiana Jones Have a Hidden Agenda?" And this article actually elaborated on, you know, whether or not the what's they called, the Edgar Cayce Foundation, the ARE, are behind, I guess, some scholarship, at least, that Hawass has at this point. Do you remember this article?
Oh, yeah. It was originally written by a guy who goes by the handle of Synthesis, and he has a group on a Newsvine site called Hall of Mirrors. I think it's like conspiracies.newsvine.com. And the article goes into what you talk about, where, you know, Hawass was educated in America, and his education was apparently funded by the Cayce Foundation. So not only is he, you know, what you might call an Egyptologist from academia, but he's very familiar, of course, with all of the alternative theories and concepts surrounding it from the Cayce Foundation. So that puts a bit of a slant on anything that he says or does, because you have to wonder, is he representing just the nation of Egypt? And the, you know, and you also have to wonder too, is, you know, was, if his education was funded by the Cayce Foundation, you know, was there any other group involved, you know, surrounding that?
And if we are
talking, because we're talking about a guy who is in basically in charge of the antiquities of Egypt, which is the most important relics from the ancient world.
Yeah.
And crucial to, you know, all of these occult groups that we're, you know, reading about. You know, I cannot imagine, you know, that if they had an opportunity, they wouldn't seize it to, you know, get control of it in that way. You know, one man at the head, and, you know, you don't need anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, in regards to the Edgar Cayce Research Foundation, have you read a lot about their? I mean, what's their agenda, so to speak? If they or do they have an agenda? What's your take on it?
Yeah, as far as I can see, it would be, you know, nothing more than having an inside man running the, you know, Department of Antiquities in Egypt and mm-hmm. having access to all of those areas and objects that most people don't.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, for study or, you know, other things.
Yeah. So on the outside, he's, you know, I guess against a lot of the more esoteric ideas, and then on the backside of it, he's actually, you know, giving access, or himself, you know, having this background in regards to it. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm, you know, against in any way the Edgar Cayce Research Foundation here. I mean,
yeah, and I think that's an important distinction, because, you know, while we're talking about this, and it, you know, it does sound somewhat sinister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important to say there's not making any judgments about Hawass or the foundation or what they're doing, because,
yeah.
you know, realistically, you know, maybe it's better to have, you know, some other groups involved in this situation than just the nation of Egypt itself, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people, I'm sure, have thought about that.
Exactly. And you know, we have a number of interesting, you know, things going on there down at Giza. Of course, we have, you know, the air shaft. I mean, do you remember seeing? Did you follow along in this when they actually drilled through the first stone in the air shaft?
Right. In the article you posted, they talk about how they sent a robot with a drill
mm-hmm.
up the shaft to
yeah.
sort of open up the passageway.
Yeah. So I mean, we have another.
And what was even crazier is supposedly when they got through the barrier, there was just another barrier behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, they call it, became known as the Gantenbrink's door or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Gantenbrink's
door. It brings to mind, and I'm not saying there's a connection here, you know, people will probably see one, but, you know, it brings to mind that the whole idea of the Oak Island treasure.
Mm.
In the Canadian Maritimes,
mm-hmm.
You know, where they supposedly, which is a pirate treasure, and we all know who the pirates were.
Yeah.
And they flew the skull and crossbones of the Templars.
Yeah.
And they supposedly buried a treasure there, and people have been digging for it for hundreds of years and haven't gotten close, but have encountered a number of traps and different, sabotages designed to foil anyone trying to get to it.
Hmm. So, do you know if they're, because that's also, of course, a very interesting, you know, topic. I've heard about it a few times, Oak Island. Do you know if they have, you know, been able to get some more evidence that there's, you know, something there, something a real treasure, something like that?
You know, I'm not really sure about that. If I'm not mistaken, I thought they had some kind of evidence, whether it was pieces of gold chain on a drill bit or something along those lines, but
mm-hmm.
I really don't recall the specifics.
Hmm. Yeah.
It seems to me, you know, and I think a lot of the people that research it, just the fact that someone went to the trouble to build this immense engineered structure,
mm-hmm.
you know, that involves all kinds of flooding systems.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And it leads you to think there's got to be something that they're hiding.
Do you think that this could be a modern creation, that someone is actually, you know, again, diverting people's attention? Look at this, something like that?
Certainly possible.
Hmm.
But, you know, I've heard about this one for a long, long time. I remember it from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people have been digging there since, I think, the 1800s.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. And, it resonates with the story, of course, in regards to the digging under the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem and stuff like this. Yeah.
That's a great connection.
Yeah. And the Templars again, of course, the nine Templars going after the treasures in Jerusalem. But in regards to the great or not the Great Pyramid, but the Sphinx, of course, as I recall it, I think that the Edgar Cayce at least were talking about that it was a hidden chamber. I think it was either between the paws of the Sphinx or that there was an entrance behind the ear. I mean, and this kind of stuff also, I guess, connects with the age of Leo, because I think that Cayce was talking about that we are again entering into this new age of you know, revealing, and that we're going to find this, you know, secret chamber connected with the Sphinx, and there we have a connection between Leo the lion, a secret chamber, and the Giza plateau, and even connecting with Hawass. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it seems to match up a little too well, almost. yeah, was it Cayce said that I think he, in a vision or something, he described a Atlantean Hall of Records under the left paw of the Sphinx.
Yeah.
So very interesting. You know, and that kind of sort of brings to mind that the book that you had mentioned by Picknett and Prince.
Yeah.
The Stargate Conspiracy.
Yeah. And again, this ties back to, of course, I know that they speak about the work of Hancock and Bevall in some sense in the book, and connects all of this stuff with the nine and these types of areas. I remember an article that you wrote to us about after we put it up on the site. It was called the Rise of the Rogue Beast, and this was also, of course, connecting with the Stargate Conspiracy. So, I mean, do you think that they, you know, have some validity to what they're saying? I think that the main thesis is that you know, that they're trying to create this kind of you know, interest in these kinds of subjects, and I don't know if they mean that, you know, that we're steering away from the real research or whatever, but do you think that they have some validity to what they're saying?
Well, let me be clear. I have not yet read the book, but I'm familiar with the theory. I think it's an interesting idea. What concerns me, I guess, the most is, you know, a lot of what it involves is connecting the people researching these things, and this is not just modern day researchers. I think they go back to, you know, Schwaller.
Schwaller Delubich, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think, you know, basically what they're doing is connecting these people with groups or societies that, you know, may be secret or have agendas. You know, I think it's probably wrong to just paint everybody who's involved with the group with that brush.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really bad to generalize like that, and I can point, you know, specifically, you know, to things that, you know, Michael Tsarian has talked about, you know, people who do, you know, are members of these organizations, but they do good things from the inside.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's very possible that these people are doing a lot more good than you know about or you may ever know about.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that these researchers are those people. I'm just saying it may be wrong to label them as nefarious, sinister characters just because they associate with people who might be.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. Yeah.
I think, you know, you can learn a lot from people of any kind. If you decide you're not going to talk or read about or learn anything from a person that you consider is, you know, bad or sinister, you know, you're not going to learn much about history or politics, because
yeah,
most of the people who have led civilizations throughout history have been these type of people.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. I mean, you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. You're not getting the entire picture. It's like a person like Crowley, for example. I mean, first of all, I don't know if all things that are being said about him are true or not. And even if they are, I'm not. I mean, it's his life and his business and so forth. I don't care about that. I mean, the main idea is that he seems to be a very interesting guy, and he has a lot of connections to a lot of, you know, other higher ups within politics, but also of course within the occult, and he has influenced a lot of people. So being able to understand him and what he tried to do, I think, is a big piece of the puzzle in order to, you know, comprehend what actually has taken place on this earth, basically.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if for nothing else, that the interest they're generating in the subject is crucial.
Yeah.
And from what I can see, the information is valid. That, you know, in the books, at least in terms of Schwalla de Lubitz or John Anthony West or Graham Hancock, you know, I can't really speak to, you know, whether or not, you know, there's any disinformation going on there.
Mm.
But I think it's important that, you know, when reading any of these things, people have an open mind, and, you know, it's that old adage, you know, align yourself with those that seek the truth and not those who claim to have already found it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, one thing that I really, you know, also, of course, appreciate with your work was the article I remember when you interviewed the Collins brothers, and, you know, again, clearly saying at the beginning of the article that, you know, you come from, you know, you go into these areas from a different background, but nonetheless, the important stuff here is about the research itself and not about, you know, what we personally believe or something like that. And I think that that's a very important aspect of actually being able to research and study these particular subjects, because this is not about, you know, sitting down and agreeing with everybody all the time. It's actually about, you know, diving into a lot of different topics with a lot of different people and being able to set your, you know, ego aside, so to speak, and take it for what it is, basically, the information.
Yeah, Henrik, that, I mean, it's so important what you said. I, you know, can't really stress that enough. You know, we could sit down with people who, you know, think exactly like we do and believe the exact same things that we do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd learn nothing. But we can sit down with, you know, people who are, you know, members of secret societies, or sit down with people who are academics, or sit down with people in alternative history,
yeah,
or, you know, in any of these fields, and, you know, have a conversation with them, and, you know, they're going to learn something from you and I. It wouldn't just be us learning from them.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. You can't know it all, and you can't have all the perspectives on all things all the time. So it's important, as you say, to learn to listen and learn to, you know, open your mind and open your eyes and ears to all of this stuff.
Exactly.
I totally agree. You know, I visited your site, and I just saw that you've put up a totally new website.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
www.occultofpersonality.com.
Yeah.
So I've had some help from a guy that runs a group called Media 2017, because he was generous enough to help me out with this, because I started getting into, you know, doing the audio interviews, and I like Vox, the platform for this website I use. You know, because it's easy to post things and, you know, graphics and whatnot. But in terms of podcasts, it's, you know, very limited. So I needed another platform, and this is kind of where it starts. Right now I've got the three different podcasts that I've done that are up on the site, and people can listen to them on the site or download them or subscribe in iTunes or whatever they want now.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, the site looks great, by the way. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Occultofpersonality.com. And as you say, I have a few podcasts up there. You had, you know, Jake has been on this show, and also Kent from Kentroversy also been on this show. So I mean, are we going to continue with the podcasts? Things developing?
Yeah, I plan to. I can't really thank all the people who've been generous enough with their time and energy to interview with me and have these discussions. I particularly want to mention a guy named Ben Fairhall who writes a blog called Battling the Behemoth.
Yeah.
And he's got a very, very great site, and I'm hoping to get him on for an interview at some point soon.
Excellent, excellent. So, I mean, if we were to kind of, round up a little bit here for today, how do you view? It's always interesting, to get the feel from people. I mean, it's always difficult to know actually what's going on and so forth. But let's say in regards to this year, and I mean, we don't particularly have to talk about 2012 and where all that is going. But let's kind of focus on this year that we're into now, and maybe the next and so forth. I mean, what's your take on all this madness that going on around us? How do you think that things will develop?
Yeah, it's quite a challenge, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it's difficult to deal with. I think everybody's gonna probably have to find their own way to handle it. For me, I think being able to become more aware of who I am and myself, what I believe in, what I think, and disconnect from the mass media, get rid of the TV, stop reading the newspaper, and, forget about those sources. And, within a few weeks, your brain starts to work again. I think that is probably one of the most important things. And that's not to say people shouldn't be informed.
Yeah.
Your site is a great, great place to go.
Thank
to
you.
Get information about what's happening in the world.
Mm.
And there's plenty of sites out there.
Absolutely.
As well. But
yeah. Yes.
I think it starts with, getting to know who you are without all of those influences from outside of you.
Yeah. Do you... Because I remember when you did the interview with me and Fredrik, you asked if we are into any spiritual practice in that sense, meditation or anything like that. I mean, is this something that that you do? If I am to turn around the question towards you.
Yeah, sure. It is something I do, and something I should do more of. And I want to be clear about it, because I think people have a lot of different ideas about what I'm talking about when I say meditation.
Mm.
When I say meditation, I'm talking about basically like what you would call insight meditation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great book by a guy named Joseph Goldstein called Insight Meditation, The Practice of Freedom. It's not about, contacting any other entity or, becoming influenced by anything. It's really quieting your mind and opening up to the amazing things that can happen when you do that.
Mm.
And I found for myself, I'm able to learn and discover things about myself and my environment that seems so obvious now, but before, I had no clue.
I mean, I get the sense, of when I'm out walking around, among people, and it's always difficult to generalize and as you said before, paint everybody with the same brush in that sense, but I get a feeling that people aren't even in contact with themselves in many cases. It's something in their eyes or whatever. I don't know. It's very difficult. It's you don't get that kind of contact with people. Then once in a while, people turn up that you actually feel that you get that contact with. I mean, Do you get the same sense, you know, from your perspective that that this is about, you know, as you say, being able to get in contact with yourself. This is about focusing and learning to quiet the mind, to actually, you know, being able to get more in contact with yourself, and hence when you do that, you're actually more in contact with the environment and the other people surrounding you.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think that's true. You know, what you talk about, you know, people, you know, have that sort of blank stare.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that a lot. I don't know if it's, you know, people trying to deal with the environment that's become so challenging as of late, just in general, or it's, you know, all of these influences in mass media and culture that are so, you know, just a constant bombardment on people's consciousness.
Yeah.
I think it may be a combination.
Sure.
But yeah, it is, it's troubling, and I think that, you know, I agree, until I was able to, you know, quiet my mind, get in touch with myself more, and, you know, it was a lot easier to deal with all of those things that used to, you know, cause me to, you know, get crazy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that that is an important aspect of it, to be able to, I guess, kind of return to a source that is quiet and you know, isn't full of fear and has a kind of a certainty in itself, beyond, you know, that you don't have to have any external things that you need to go to get your, you know, to be comforted or whatever. So I think that these two kind of connects very much. I mean, the importance, I think, here is to stress that there's a connection between the spiritual aspects of all of this information and, of course, the materialistic. So we have to be aware of a lot of things that are going on, but at the same time, we don't, you know, we must make sure that we aren't, you know, dominated by them in that sense. So it's a fine balance. Do you agree on that?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance, and it's a constant, you know, tinkering with that balance, I think, to, you know, maintain it, because, you know, there's constant things that are happening that affect us all the time, you know, that try to sort of disrupt that balance once we've achieved it. and that's a, you know, a constant thing, I think, is, you know, once you recognize it, to maintain it, or at least try to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I mean, Greg, again, I mean, this has been an excellent discussion, and congratulations on getting the new site up again. It looks great. I'm going to link that up right away, and again, do continue your work and your research, and I hope we can, you know, do this again sometime, diving to there's a lot of, you know, topics out there and ideas to you know, throw around, so to speak. So this has been great, so I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Greg.
Oh, thank you, Henrik. It's been my pleasure, and it's great to talk with you and Frederick. And you know, I, you know, continue to read your site as I do every day, and you know, I appreciate all the work that you both do, and I think we all appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, again, before we finish off here, are you gonna keep posting on the Vox? Vox.com site, or are going to go over to occultofpersonality.com altogether?
Well, for right now, I'm going to keep both up and running, and we'll see what happens.
Sure. Mention both of those sites again for us, so people will be able to find it.
Yeah, sure. The main blog site is Rochester, Rochester, 92.vox.com. And right now, the podcast site that's up is www.occultofpersonality.com.
Excellent. So again, Greg, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll speak more soon.
Excellent. Thanks again, Henry.
Thank you so much for tuning into the program. Please remember that we have a free radio archive and also a subscriber-based archive for all you guys out there who want even more. And at the same time, you'll help and support this radio program and the RedIceCreations.com website. This is what keeps us going. Thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren behind the controls. We will be back on Thursday with Philip Coppens, so heads up on that. We will speak soon. This is Henrik Palmgren. Take care.